Well, before this episode, I texted a good friend of yours and mine and your business partner, Stuart Lockery, and I asked him if he had a specific question for you, Terry. And that question was, directly from Stuart, on a scale of 0 to 10, how handsome is Stuart Lockery? So what's your answer to this?
Oh, dear. How handsome is Stuart? He's such a git, isn't he? How the hell he bribed them to give him the chairmanship of the NJC, I never know. Well, look, it's got to be above a 0, hasn't it? Because NJC were never an ugly chairman, you know?
I'm not commenting. The question for you, not for me.
We do have a business together, so I need to be kind of nice to him. But I've also got to be honest, you know. I'm gonna do the ultimate number that people always give when they're scaling 0 to 10. He's a 7.
He's a Scottish Han Solo, is at least an 8. But thank you for answering that question.
Scottish answer, please.
The Instructor Podcast with Terry Cook, talking with leaders, innovators, experts and game changers about what drives them.
Welcome to the Instructor Podcast. This is a show that helps you become an even more awesome driving instructor and run a better driving school. As always, I am your jolly northern host, Terry Cook. I'm delighted to be here, but even more delighted that you have chosen to listen, because today we are joined by Terry Lefteri. And we are talking about the driving test and how to prepare students for the driving test by specifically not talking about the driving test. But before we get stuck into this episode, I want to point you in the direction of the Instructor Podcast Premium. Because if you enjoy these episodes, you will love it over there, where we cover what I consider to be the three pillars of being a driving instructor, where we look at health, we look at business, and we look at the in-car stuff we do with our learners. So whilst I wouldn't suggest that you ditch your regular Costa coffee, for the cost of a couple of those coffees, you can get access to everything over there to help you become an even more awesome driving instructor. So head to the description for this episode, and there'll be a nice link there for you to go and sign up. But for now, let's get stuck into the show. But today, I'm delighted to be joined by Terry Lefteri. How are we doing, Terry?
Oh, my God. You got my name wrong straight away.
How have I got your name wrong? What have I said?
You did it at Kev Field. You did Kev Field saying.
What?
Terry Lefteri reminds me of being at school. Terry Lefteri in the toilet. Terry Lefteri in the changing room. Blah, 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 blah. So if we don't, we pronounce it Lefteri, then he can't make any jokes about that. You see? But Kev Field has a massive problem saying my name.
Is that the correct way to pronounce it, Lefteri?
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Let's say it is.
Where have I heard Stuart Lockery? Stuart, I'm blaming Stuart for that, because I'm sure he pronounced it to me, Lefteri, so I'm blaming Stuart for that.
He does it on purpose.
So today I'm delighted to be joined by Terry Lefteri. Hold on. Lefteri. Terry Lefteri.
That was good. Yeah, second one is good. Second one was good. Perfect.
And yes, you are welcome to follow up every opportunity during this episode. So welcome to the show. That's how we like to start. How come I can get, right, Mitali Depakestra's name correct? Not yours.
Who?
Exactly. Mitali Depakestra, but not, hold on, I'm going to try one more time. Terry Lefteri.
Perfect.
And we'll go with Perfect. That. Okay, cool. So, first question, Terry, and I'm just going to stick with Terry. Mm-hmm. It's a good name. Well done. tell me a little bit about you and about where you sit in this industry, because we've never really spoken much before, but I wanted to get you on to talk about a few specific topics. But tell me a bit about you and about your place in this industry.
My place in the industry? Wow, that's a interesting question. If we talk about the coaching spectrum, the instruction and coaching, I think that's probably best way to explain where I sit. I'm way, way over on the coaching side. You know, I've been in this industry since 1998. So I've done both sides. I've done the instruction. I've done the PST training. I've done all that. And when I started being interested in coaching, around 2005, I think it was roughly. I've gone further and further and further along towards the coaching end of it. And I'd like to think that I've made a tiny difference in terms of picking up coaching in this industry.
Does it still bother you that there's a debate to be had about should we be coaching or should we be instructing?
I think the word is frustration. And there are various reasons for the misunderstanding of coaching in this industry. Because I'm going to hazard a guess that 90% of the industry, and it includes non-instructors, have a misunderstanding of what coaching is. And it's extremely frustrating because it's not their fault. It's the powers that be when they had a massive chance in 2014 to make a massive, massive difference for the better in this industry. And in my opinion, they blew it with the rhetoric that was coming out at the time. So yeah, it is frustrating when I read posts about coaching. I did this coaching and I'm reading it and that's not coaching. Yeah, it's not their fault. So the frustration is the powers that be and how they try to introduce it.
One of the things that works in my favour is I'm still an active driving instructor. I work with PDIs, I work with ADIs as well, but I still teach learners and I'll never stop that because I enjoy it so much. But one of the things that works in my favour is I do get to the test centres and I do get to speak to driving instructors at test centres, and there are some brilliant driving instructors that I get to speak, and there are some other ones that have challenging viewpoints. And I'm going to relay a story. I told this recently. I think it might be in my membership, so I'm not repeating it too much. But I'm going to tell a story, and I'm going to not use the expletive for this story. And it was at the test center, and this chap walks down to me, and he says, "My student's going to effing fail today." And I kind of just gave him a blank stare. And he's like, "No, he's definitely going to effing fail. I've told him he's going to effing fail. He never checks his effing mirrors, and his dad's a bus driver, and his dad's told him to check his effing mirrors. He never checks his effing mirrors." And it was like this rant that felt like it went on for the full length of the test, but in reality, it was probably about 30 seconds. But he just kept saying how he tells him to check his mirrors or his effing mirrors and never checks them. And he's definitely going to fail, and he's told him he's going to fail. So I'm like, I've calmed myself down a little bit because this is like prickling me up a little bit. And I've just said, "Can I offer a piece of advice?" And he's like, "Yeah." I says, "Stop telling him to check his mirrors because that doesn't seem to be working." And he went quiet for a minute. He was like thinking it over and he went, "Well, I don't know what to effing do I? And turned around and walked off. And I get the feeling there's a lot of people like that, that have been either teaching for a while in an old style, old school mindset, old school way, if you like, and have suddenly been told, or they feel like they've been told, they're doing it wrong. The way you've done it for the last 5, 10, 20 years, whatever, is wrong. You now need to change. And I get the feeling there's a lot of people that don't like that because it feels like a personal attack almost. Is that something that you come across, do you think?
Absolutely. I mean, it's human nature, isn't it? We don't like change. We don't like to even have the suggestion that what we've thought is the right way. And maybe not, might not be the best way anymore. And especially in the early days, you know, in terms of when people started talking about coaching. And so it was around 2014, 2013, 15. There was a lot of heated debates, shall we say, on Facebook. And there's nothing more frustrating than hearing someone say, "My pass rate's high, my pupils enjoy their lessons, so I'm doing a good job." You know, and that's great. I mean, you know, if that's why someone is in the job, to have a great pass rate, people enjoy the lessons, then fine. That's why they're in the job. But for me, that's not why I'm in this job. It's why I came into this job. And if you'd have asked me 25 years ago, I'd have said, "Well, I've got high pass rate, my pupils enjoy the lessons, so I must be doing a good job." But then I started looking into the coaching, and I read The Inner Game of Tennis. That was my first kind of, and you know, introduction to it. So I used to be a tennis coach as well. I used to do the two jobs simultaneously. And it was just, wow. after reading that book, The Inner Game of Tennis, and The Hobbit are the only books I've read twice. And so, and it just had a profound effect on what I was trying to do. And I tried to implement, because it worked with tennis coaching. I used the tools and the techniques and stuff and all the stuff I learned from the Inner Game of Tennis and tennis coaching. And it was making a difference to players. So now I just thought by myself, let's try and do this with my driving lessons. And I failed miserably. You know, it didn't work. And that's what I mean, I still had, you know, in my head that we should be doing better. There is a better way of doing this job, because I could see in tennis coaching that this is making a difference. These methods, these techniques are making a difference, you know, about self-awareness and all that kind of stuff. There must be a better way to teach people to drive, because something that I've never understood are the embarrassing KSI stats for young drivers. And it's still embarrassing. It's still something we should be ashamed of as an industry. And I know that's going to upset people, but so what? And it's never changed. It's always been about the same. So there must be something that we can do better as an industry, not as individuals, that's going to change those stats. So, you know, I quite early on in my career as an ADI started to change my outlook, and it's not about having a high pass rate. It's not about your students enjoying the lessons. Obviously, they have to. It has to be an enjoyable learning environment. But it's not about passing a test. It's about, can they get their friends and family home safely at night? That's what it became for me. It's how can I help them get home safely at night and not, you know, be wrapped around a tree? And so this is what I want. And there's others as well. There's plenty of other people who have this idea to drag this industry up, and let's start, you know, making a difference to these KSI stats. And it's not going to be by helping people pass tests.
No, I love it. You bring road safety into it and you've got my hook straight away. I think there's people, how can I phrase this? There'll be a lot of people listening to this. It's almost an element of preaching is converted. But I still think even those people that you would class as converted, some of them will still feel almost like the back gets up a little bit from that comment of we should be doing more. We're responsible, or at least partly responsible for these stats. Because I believe this, you know, and I remember last year I posted something on LinkedIn about why are we talking more about the top 10 reasons people fail a test and not the top 10 reasons people crash. There was a driving instructor who, I think he was one of the guys at the driving instructor union, in fact, which is a thing I didn't know about until that time. And his comment to me was somewhat along the lines, go on then, put a percentage of responsibility that driving instructors have for death on the road. I'm like, how can I put a percentage on it? Like, what? But it annoyed him. And then, of course, other driving instructors are coming in saying 0%. We're not responsible. We can't control what they do after test. And do you know what? There's an element of truth in it. We can't control what anyone does after test, but we can influence what they do after the test. And we've got somewhere between 20 and, in some cases, 120 hours to influence people. Do you think that there are some driving instructors out there that don't realize the influence we can have?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you said it. We can never tell someone how to behave the same way we can't tell someone how to feel or what to think. But you're absolutely right. We are in this confined space with often 17, 18-year-old impressionable young people. How the hell will we not influence them? They have no one. There is a hierarchy, and there shouldn't be, but there is a hierarchy in the car that, you know, they will listen to you. If you have the right relationship, they will listen to you, they will respect you, and it is absolutely a perfect opportunity to influence their thoughts and their behavior post-test. And anyone who thinks they can't influence a young person in terms of their behavior and thoughts and feelings post-test, you know, stop. Go and stack some shelves in Tesco. You can't do any damage there. You know, if you're one of those people that believes that, and you've updated my comment, I don't care. If you don't have the skills, you don't know how to influence young people, then go and get some training from people who know and who can help you do that. Because, you know, I'm sort of bang on about it. We should be doing so much better. And the way we do that is influencing.
I think I want to come back to that in a minute. Maybe the big question is how, which is probably too big for this episode, but we can look at how we start. But I think before we do, actually, I want to touch back on something else you said, because you mentioned that when you first sort of brought coaching into what you do as a result of listening to the Inner Game, as a result of reading The Inner Game of Tennis, you said that you described yourself as failing miserably. And again, I think that's where a lot of people go wrong, is they'll try it. It doesn't work the first time, because let's admit it, they're probably crap at it because they've never done it before. But it doesn't work the first time, so then they give up. So I think it's great that you're admitting that, you know, kind of saying, I was crap when I first started doing this, I failed miserably. But how do you get over that hurdle of not being good when you first start? And not just like the technical aspect of getting training, although you please tell me about that, but the idea of that perseverance, that psychological barrier we can have.
I guess it's because I believed in it. Because I had the experience of seeing the results on a tennis court, that I knew this worked, and having that belief that this works. I know it can work. And then John Farlam started talking about it in his, was it weekly's email send out, or was it monthly? I can't remember. But he started talking about it, and he started coming up with some ideas, and it was right up my street. It was, you know, aligned with my beliefs of how we should be doing this job better, differently. And that started maybe 2007, 2008. And so I started following John Lockwood more closely, and then I went up to Derbyshire to see him for some training, along with it's a momentous occasion, because that's when I first met Ian Lavelle, who was a good friend now. So if I didn't do that, I'd never met Ian, which would have been made my life much darker. And some other guy, I can't remember. I wish I remember who he was. And then following on from that, I signed up to the BTEC with him, Sue McCormack and Graham Hooper. And the BTEC for me was that missing link. And Fiona Taylor said this, and I've always said it the way Fiona said it originally, but it was the missing link between what I was doing and what I wanted to do. And so, you know, I didn't sit in my car going, oh, but you should be doing this better and doing anything about it. I got off my ass and I paid for training it wasn't cheap, but it was so worth it. And I just invested in myself financially and time-wise to go and get the skills that I knew I needed to help or make a small change to those freaking KSI stats. So yeah, I went, got off my ass and went and trained and learned from people who knew better than me.
I think the big thing I take from that as well, just going back to what you said initially, the idea of admitting or owning the fact that you failed initially. I think that one of the problems that we have in our industry, but probably every industry, is that a lot of people that are good and prominent just talk about how good they are. They don't talk about the times they struggle. They don't own the fails they've had that week. You know, Fridays, I'll regularly put a post about the Friday fail. You know, I'll do that. And I have someone in my membership, it's like talk about the F word, which is fail, not the other one. You know, and it's that kind of stuff. And I try and be an open honest and talk about that. So I like that you do. Would you agree with that? Do you think that we can be guilty sometimes of talking about how easy stuff is and how good I am at this thing, rather than just going, yeah, it's not always easy. You're going to find it hard, but we need to work through that.
Absolutely. I mean, I would never say I'm good. I leave that to, you know, or bad or rubbish or whatever. I'd leave that to other people. It's other people's opinion of me. And that's fine. That's the way it should be. But I think it's about being honest to yourself and having that self-awareness to go, you know what, I'm not good at this, I'm going to get some help. Or I could be better at this, putting more positive, I could be better at what I'm doing, I'm going to go and get some help and learn from someone who can help me improve. You know, I'm still doing that. I've just done the diploma with Kev Field and Neil Whiteman at Innovative Training. It's the name of it, show me.
Idea. That's all we need to know. Idea.
Yeah, DT Idea. There you go. So I'm still doing, I'm still reading, I'm still watching podcasts, listening to people who I can learn from. And it's like, you know, it's a never-ending journey. It's this learning arc. Can't remember your original question. I'm trying to answer it.
Just the idea of, are we guilty of, whether it's you personally or like generally more prominent people, guilty of presenting this image of everything's rosy rather than talking about the times where you've struggled as well?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
In answer to your question before I go for one, I think so, yeah. I hope that I don't fall into that category. But yeah, I think, and also in terms of learning, you know, it's good to know that the people you look up to in terms of their ideas and their skills and everything, it's good to know for that person learning that, okay, this person fucked up, this person messed up as well. You know, they make mistakes. And it's something I'd like to do in my training when I'm training PDIs. It's like, you know, I've done that. I've made those. I've done that in lessons. I still used to do it in lessons when I was qualified. And I think, see, it's important to look at it as the journey. And something I used to tell my tennis players, you know, when they were having a bad lesson or a bad session, or they played the result of the match wasn't great, or you know, it's, remember, you, Tim Henman, that's how long ago it was. Tim Henman used to be the same standard as you are right now. So Tim Henman and who else was it? Sampras and Federer, people like that. They've all been the same standard you are, and they've made the same mistakes you're making. So it's not going to be a straight line up. You're going to have ups and downs. And I think that's important to understand. You know, admit to your mistakes, people respect it, and don't ever put yourself on the pedestal. Because you're easily knocked off.
I loved Pete Sampras. I thought you were awesome.
Hello, my name is Stuart Lockery. I'm the founder at Bright Coaching. Driving instruction has changed. Today's learners need more than just skills and practice and reps to pass a driving test. They need coaching that addresses the higher levels of the GDE on every single lesson. That's why we created the Professional Diploma in Coaching and Behavioural Change for Safe Driving. This accredited qualification, equivalent to a BTEC Professional Award Level 4-5, gives you the tools and recognition to transform the way you teach. With Bright Coaching, you can leave the DVSA behind and step into a modern, learner-focused approach, one that shifts the paradigm of driver education for instructors, for pupils, and for parents all across the country. At Bright Coaching, we are training the next generation of driving instructors. Our next program, Cohort 6, launches in Coventry on the 20th of March 2026, and we'd love you to join us. Please visit brightcoaching.net to sign up today.
Are you an ADI looking for something different? Well, at Drive Up Training, we don't offer franchises. We offer supporterships. And that means no long contracts, no hidden catches, just genuine support, development, and community. Our ADI development program is designed to take your career further. And as part of the program, you will have the chance to gain additional qualifications, such as ROSPA and IEM Advanced Driving, your Level 3 awards in both education and training, and coaching and mentoring, as well as the Bright Coaching Diploma. With Drive Up Training, you're not just teaching learners to drive. You're building a professional future backed by expert trainers, ongoing CPD, and a team that shares your values. So if you're ready to join a driving school with a difference, visit driveuptraining.co.uk today, where instructors grow and road safety wins.
The one that always sort of springs to my mind here is I had a teaching a lady, I think it was last year. She was about my age. She was in her 40s. And it was quite early on in lessons, but she was very nervous. And she just had a lesson where she's got in her own head about stalling, and she was stalling more frequently. And then at the end of the lesson, she's like, "Will you drive us home? I don't want to, I just want to." I'm like, "Okay, you know, I felt like I'll let you off this time. I'll drive us back." I stalled on the way home, and it wasn't intentional. It was a mistake. It was a right turn as well off a main road. The next lesson, she got in car and she's like, "I feel quite positive about today." And I'm like, "Why?" She goes, "Because I saw you stall last time. And I don't know if you did it on purpose or by accident, but it was nice seeing that you can do it too." I'm like, "Oh, maybe I'll start doing this every lesson." But seeing me fail in her eyes reassured her that it's not just her. So I think that's why I liked it, that you own that pretty quickly. But going back to how we influence drivers, how we influence learners that become drivers, or however you want to phrase it, there's an awful lot to cover there. So I think the question I would ask is, what advice would you give to someone who wants to start, you know, maybe either embracing coaching for the first time or trying to bring it more into what they do? Where would you suggest someone start there?
Well, so many places you can start. I mean, the obvious first place to start with is self-awareness, understanding what you're doing, understanding where you want to get to. Because if you're not self-aware, it's not going to work. The massive part of coaching is self-awareness. And then I would say, go and find someone who knows what they're talking about. Speak to people. If you find someone, research that, what have they done in the past? What qualifications have they got? What experience have they got? What have they done badly, you know, in the past? And then along with the self-awareness is the awareness that you need to have. You need to go into this with an empty mind. You know, forget everything you've done before. Some of it you're doing already will be brilliant. You will need those skills. But go into this thinking, you know, I can do this job better than I'm doing at the moment, and be ready to make mistakes.
I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit, actually, with this, because what's something someone could start or add into a lesson in terms of coaching? I'll give you my example, if that's okay. Because I always think, start at the beginning. You know, you don't, if you've never considered doing any form, bringing any form of coaching before, and you want to go and just try it before you even get any training, well, you could bring it into the goal setting at the start of the lesson. Instead of coming in and just telling the student what you're doing, you could ask them. And whether that's a really broad, open question, which a lot of people don't like, it, what do you fancy doing today? You know, or whether it's a bit more specific and say, can I give you some suggestions based off what we did last week, or anywhere in between those two. Feel that if that's all you did on that next lesson, that's starting to get the ball rolling. So I always think along those lines. Is there anything else you might add that something could go away and start doing on a lesson?
Yes. The first thing I would start with is, again, have an empty head. When you ask a question, have no idea of the answer you're looking for, and just be curious and interested in the answers they give you from a totally non-judgmental place. The toughest thing about coaching, one of the toughest things about coaching, is having that non-judgmental, whatever that is, whatever that's called, non-judgmentalism. that you know, every answer you get from someone is a gift, and even if the answer is a shrug, or the answer is a don't know, it's still a gift, and you've got to react to that gift and just be curious about it. That would be where I'd probably start.
Be curious. I like it. And well, I've joked
be
about
interested.
This. I've joked about this for the past 5 years, but the single best thing I did that helped me become a better coach was start a podcast, because I can't ask you a question expecting not to know what the answer is. I need to hear your answer and then follow on from that. And that has helped me so much.
Exactly.
Yeah. And now, obviously, not everyone can start a podcast. Well, they can start a podcast, but it's just that. It's I need to know what your answer is going to be before I can follow on from that. I can't predict what your answer is going to be. And it's same with the learners. You know, I need to find out what your answer is. Now, I'm human. sometimes it comes to my brain. Sometimes I think, oh, I bet he'll say this or I bet he'll say that. I'm human. I can't always control that. But it's a case of going, all right, well, let's see if we're right. And then when you answer it, it's like, oh, no, you were wrong. Because 9 times out of 10, I will be. Like, oh, I'm wrong. Okay. Right. And then where do we go next? So, yeah, be curious. Yeah. I like that.
Yes, definitely.
I want to bring this back sideways, if you like, a little bit, because I want to bring it back to the driving test. Because one of the things that you speak about a lot on your own courses on is how and why people fail a driving test and how we can rectify that, if you like, for better lack of expression. So again, I'm going to throw that open nice and broad. Talk to me a bit about that.
Well, it starts with that idea that, you know, I'm not here to help you pass a test. I'm here to make sure you can get your friends and family home safely at night and then yourself afterwards. Mm. And I think one of the problems, and this goes back to the training people have had, and it's not their fault. But the DVSA are so test focused in everything they put out. I mean, the top 10 reasons just wind me up. And their communications with the public are all test focused. So it's no surprise that people come to us when they're ready. I want to pass my test. And it's our job, or my belief, our job is to change that, help them change that mentality. Look, it's not about the test. It's about making sure you get home safely at night. And we can start that from day one. Because if you have it in the back of your mind that I need to help this person pass the test, doesn't matter what you think you're doing, your training will be test focused. You will be training to pass a test. And you see it on so many adverts and posts. I don't teach people to pass a test. I teach safe driving for life. And I've sat in the back of so many ADI and PDI lessons for to help them. And they'll tell me, I don't teach to pass the test. I teach safe driving for life. But as soon as they start talking, you can hear they're teaching to pass the test. Because the biggest problem is they are teaching to pass the test because they're teaching to a standard that's going to get them to pass the test because it's on the marking sheet. And they teach to the marking sheet. Oh, you know, I teach people to do drive-throughs and multi-story car parks, and that's not on the test. That's fantastic, brilliant. That's something you should definitely be doing. But in your head, you've got they have to pass the test. And so the language we use in lessons, you know, even the language in our head, not just the language we verbalize, we have in our head is like, what do examiners think of that? As soon as you are thinking that, you are teaching to pass a test. You know, oh, that's a great bit of parking. The examiner would love that. You are teaching to pass a test, I'm sorry, because that's the standard you're aiming at, the standard that the examiner will be happy with. And so we as an industry, probably a better thing to say, is we will say things like that to boost confidence and to show how impressed we are with the standard and help them feel better about another roundabout, the parking or the whatever. But if your training, the way you train is focused on the test, then what you are doing, every time you mention test or examiner, you are adding a little bit of pressure into that learner. And it's like a wind-up toy. We're winding him up, test. Examiner would like that. Wind him up a bit more. Wind up a bit more. And so the 40-odd hours you've spent winding him up into this tight, nervous toy, and it's now test day. And every lesson they've had has been focused on this one point. And so you've come in from this massive angle at the beginning, and you're now focused on test, and the test is now here. Of course they're going to have a brain fart. Of course they're going to mess up something you've practiced 100 times, because there is so much pressure on them that they've now got to the end, because that's what they've been taught. Even you know, subconsciously, not even on purpose from most ADIs or PDIs. They've now, you know, there's been so much pressure built up because this is it. This is the day I've been working for the last 40 hours. Of course there's going to be so much pressure. Of course they're going to do stuff they wouldn't normally do. Of course they're going to mess up stuff that's easy. They've never done before. you know, and oh, they failed because of nerves. No, they fucking didn't. You know, they had a brain fart. I've never seen them do it before. That's because, you know, and we've got to stop having this idea. This person needs to pass the test. The test is, of course, I understand that it's going to be nerves. It's a test. Of course, I understand that. But we don't help with the way that we look at our job as an instructor. That our job is to help people pass tests, because it's not. It's, you know, if the conversations you have should be around, you know, I mean, the example I use on the course is, you know, they've parked a foot away from the curb, or a little bit more than a foot away. That's too far from the curb on a parallel park. You know, in your head, and I'm making assumptions here, as a PDI or ADI, you open the door and you go, in your head, that's too far. Right. Why is it too far? Because they wouldn't pass their test. And so the conversation may not mention the test. It may, you know, if that happens on test, that would be a bit far, or, you know, it's examiner wouldn't like that. You're not going to pass that, you know, that kind of language. But in your head, you started with, that's too far because it wouldn't pass the test. Now imagine you approach it a different way. You know, you say to your mate, you say to the person you're teaching, it might be your mate. Now, that's your best mate. What's your best mate's name? Dave. Right, that's Dave. That's where Dave lives. Let's say you're picking him up to go to a festival or something, or go out for a party, and you park like this. What's Dave going to say when he comes out and sees you park like that? Oh, he'll take the piss. Okay. So go and have another go, and go and put the car back where Dave's not going to take the piss. That's non-test focused training. I said, no, in your head, there's nothing about the test. It's what would his mate think if he bar like this? And give him examples. You know, if your student likes playing football, you picked up mate to go and play football. What are they going to say? And it's not in the head. It's not a test either. It's helping them think about the future them. What happens after I'm driving by myself? That's the standard. And when we talk about the standard should be their standard, that's what we mean. Not the test standard.
But I think there's a lot I want to touch back on there. I think I agree. I think maybe, well, I'll put my context on it, if you like, in that I always think of it as the driving test is one of the few things in life where the test is easier than what you do after the test. Mm. So yes, like you said, you'll get nervous, you'll get pressure on a driving test, of course you will. So that aspect of it is potentially harder. But the driving you do on a driving test compared to the driving you do potentially every day, it's remarkably easy. You get to drive for 10 minutes and have a pull up and have a rest. You get to do a bay park in the quiet bit of the car park. You get to do a parallel park from behind a parked car. Now, I know they're potentially changing this, but, you know, we're looking at what it is now. The skill level on a driving test is remarkably low compared to what it is in real life driving. So it can't generally be a skill thing as to why people fail. Yeah. So I think I agree. I think it, just the way I look at it slightly differently, potentially, I don't know. Maybe this is the same. Is I talk a lot about you. Well, let's get you to a driver standard. And then when you're a driver standard, your test will be easy because you're already driving to this high standard. And like you say, the language we use and the experience and the practice we do is all based around how do you become a good driver? Avoiding the test as much as possible. The tricky bit is when they ask about the test, we'll come back to that potentially. But so I think we're on the same wavelength there, actually, as I talk through that. But an interesting one for me, and I had a student who passed earlier this year, and annoyingly, she didn't put it in a review. She got out of the car and she kind of paused before she closed the door, and she went, this is just after she passed the test, sorry. She kind of paused before she closed the door and went, I've been a driver for months, haven't I? And I didn't answer. She went, I've been driving for months, haven't I? And she went, now I can just do it legally. And I thought, that's it. That sums up, in my opinion, how I teach and how we should teach. It's just my opinion that we should teach them to drive. And then the test is just something that lets them do it legally. It's just perform a set of basic skills.
It's a stepping stone, yeah.
Yeah. As I've described that, are we on the same wavelength there, do you think?
Yeah, and I love what she said. That's great. And then that's exactly what it should be, you know. And so I would imagine that non-test focused training on the test, they will drive for themselves, not for the examiner, which I think makes a big difference to their mindset. But yeah, I love that. I love that what you said. That was brilliant. I've been driving for months.
Yeah. See, I've just been waiting for a test for ages. Maybe that's part of the problem now. You've got tests on the brain all the time. But that aspect there, though, not driving for the examiner, I think that's huge. Because I'm sure you've seen this, and I'm sure people listening have seen this, where you can, if you sat on the test and you see them, you can see them thinking about the examiner. Like, it's almost telepathy. You can see them. They're not thinking about the driving. They're thinking about, you know, they'll make a, I hate the word, but they'll make a mistake, and straight away their eyes kind of go towards it, or their body language inches towards the examiner. What's he put? Or they'll put something on the iPad that might not even be a fault recording, but they'll do something with the iPad. And straight away, you can see them shift a little bit. And I suppose an element of that is natural. You are being assessed. But what can we do then to shift that focus away from the examiner, do you think?
A lot of it is to do with helping them understand that the test, like you said, is a stepping stone. It's the bare minimum. It's a bloody easy test. It's not a difficult test. 15 faults in 40 minutes, Jesus. So it's not difficult. But I think that how we help them is from day one, helping them understand that the goal isn't to pass the test. You know, it's the next step you need to take. So you can do it by yourself and you can get your friends home safely. And, you know, the examiner wants you to pass. When you pass, the examiner's job is easy. They'll just send it off. When they fail, they've got to write all this stuff about why you failed and who it affected and blah, blah, blah. So they want you to pass. They're not ogres. Their job satisfaction comes from seeing your face when you pass. And I think that this also comes from the relationship in the car. You know, if you're interested in what they say and you're curious about what they say and the chat you have from a non-judgmental place, I think it makes it a lot easier for them to understand that Mr. or Mrs. Examiner are on their side as well, I think.
Well, how do we manage the test questions or the test discussion from students then?
It's a very similar way to I mean, don't get me wrong, you have to have test prep. You know, test prep is not test focused training. You know. So I would, when I used to teach learners, we'd go and park up in the car park, we'd go for a walk, we'd go and sit in the test in the car park, waiting if they wanted to. We'd go through what happens in a day. That's test prep. That's, in my opinion, that's fine. That's part of getting them ready. But those conversations, if someone was to ask me, you know, would that pass a test, I would just flip it straight away and say, well, what would your mate Dave think about it? What would your boyfriend think of that? A good question I like to ask boy drivers, boy learners rather, was, what would your girlfriend's dad think of that behavior? Would you drive like that with your girlfriend's dad in the back? You know, would he pass? Would he think that's a good drive? Again, it's futuring themselves, looking past the test and just flipping it.
Yeah. I don't work with many teenagers at the minute. I seem to have an older client base. But one thing I used to ask the young lads were, you know, who's your favourite footballer? And I'm like, okay, imagine you're chauffeuring them. How would you drive differently? You know, I always found that worked quite well. But the test prep
is interesting. It's not a test. It's not a test.
Yeah. Do you know what? A specific example I find that I think works well in this scenario is bay parking. Go to Asda, all the supermarkets are available. Do your bay park. They're right tight to one line on their side, for example. I sometimes ask them about the test on this because I ask them two questions. Would you pass a test? And they'll say, well, I think so. Then I'll ask them, would you leave it here if you were off shopping? And they'll say no. And I find that fascinating. Mm. And I'll say, okay, I'll move it. And they'll adjust it, and it's good then practice adjusting it. But it's like, look, because this is a standard you want to achieve. You don't want to be there. You want to be here. But it also shows them, again, how the skill level on the test is, you know, potentially easy. So that's me bringing the test into it because I'm asking those two questions. Would this pass a test? And then also, would you leave it here? So I'm intrigued your thoughts on me doing that, because I'm bringing the SES into it. Feel free to critique me.
I think you're right. The different answers are really interesting. You know, it passed the test, but we'll leave it here. That difference there is really interesting, because I'm all into like how the brain works and psychology and stuff. I personally wouldn't. I would just ask the second question. You know, would you leave here and go shopping?
Yeah.
But I think the difference, from a good aspect, I think asking the way you asked it, I think that's, just thinking about it, I think that's pretty good actually, because then it helps them understand that there might be a difference between post-test driving and test driving. So I'm going to say, keep doing it.
It's rare I get positive feedback during a podcast, so I like that. That's my clip now. But I realized as I was saying it then as well, that something we spoke about earlier was not presuming answers. And I do presume the answer, but I am never expect it. I should clarify that, because I will get some people that sometimes that say, no, I would leave it. But that opens up a discussion of what I'm going to do with small part next year. But you get in when you come back, and it opens up that brilliant discussion. So again, it's exactly. Waiting for their answer.
Hello, my name is Stuart Lockery. I'm the founder at Bright Coaching. Driving instruction has changed. Today's learners need more than just skills and practice and reps to pass a driving test. They need coaching that addresses the higher levels of the GDE on every single lesson. That's why we created the Professional Diploma in Coaching and Behavioural Change for Safe Driving. This accredited qualification, equivalent to a BTEC Professional Award Level 4-5, gives you the tools and recognition to transform the way you teach. With Bright Coaching, you can leave the DVSA behind and step into a modern, learner-focused approach, one that shifts the paradigm of driver education for instructors, for pupils, and for parents all across the country. At Bright Coaching, we are training the next generation of driving instructors. Our next program, Cohort 6, launches in Coventry on the 20th of March 2026, and we'd love you to join us. Please visit brightcoaching.net to sign up today.
Are you a PDI ready to start your journey to becoming a driving instructor? Then it's time to drive up your future with Drive Up Training. At Drive Up Training, we believe the journey to qualifying should be as empowering as the career that follows. We don't just teach you the basics or teach you to pass a test. Using coaching techniques, we provide you the skills to inspire, lead, and build safe, confident drivers for life. Our mission is to create forward-thinking, safe drivers so that our roads are much safer. To achieve this, we educate and develop road safety specialists who know how to coach real-world driving skills that saves lives and how to transfer those skills to learners. Our expert trainers are passionate professionals who care about more than just qualifications. They care about people. With road safety at the core of everything we do, we shape the instructors who shape the next generation of drivers. Honesty, professionalism, and compassion are the values that drive us, because you're not just learning to instruct, you're learning to make a difference. So, if you're serious about starting your instructor journey the right way, start it with Drive Up Training. For more information, please visit our website at www.drive-up-training.co.uk or call us today on 0330 133 2669.
But I suppose I just want to touch on that a little bit more around the idea of them asking questions around a test. Mm-hmm. And again, I'm going to give you my thoughts on this. And it's, I tend to answer it and then do what you've suggested. It's, would I fail a test for that? Well, yeah. Or I'll ask them, I'll say, what do you think? And they'll say, you know, yes, no, I don't know, whatever. But I have the discussion around the test, and what would happen in real life? Well, I'd have crashed. Right. Well, that's why you would have failed the test. So is it anything to do with a test? No. So what's it to do with me not crashing? Right. And we kind of build it on from there. You're pulling a slightly different expression at this one, Terry. So.
No, it's just, I'm just thinking about it. It's made me think. Okay. Look, I'm not saying I'm right. I'm not saying I'm at the front of all knowledge. I would never think that. Just for me, I mean, I like what you do. I like there's that compare and contrast thing with what their behavior and what would happen in real life and stuff. And I think that's important, obviously. But I just have the belief that every time you mention the T word or the examiner word, you just turn that screw a bit more.
I think I agree. I'm probably making it sound like...
Shut me up.
No, I think I'm probably... It's one of those things where I can think of an example of where I've done something, and now it's in my head. It feels like I do it every 10 minutes on a lesson, and it's not. It's the thing that happens occasionally. I think I'm very much along the same wavelength, but where I'm maybe not quite as far. I'm a bit more happy to talk about it, but do you know what? I think it's because I'm interested in... what people ask and why they ask it. I think there's a bit of that there from me. And it's like you mentioned the examiner there. The best ones for me that seem to take the pressure off are inadvertent ones where a student accidentally calls the examiner an examinator. And all of a sudden there's no pressure on him anymore, because now when they say examiner and I will keep repeating examinator, they think it's hilarious. And it's like all the pressure goes. And so I think there's elements of that going around in my brain as well. But it's, how do you steer? I think you touched on this before, but I just want to ask again, how do we steer away from it? So when that student says, bay parking, let's stick with that example, I'm online or just inside line. So technically, if we're talking tests at the pass, so the student says to you, would this pass a test? How do you come away from that without just potentially just shutting them down?
I would just say, would you leave it here? And then it opens up a conversation, like I said. So when you come back, what shape is your door going to be? How easy will it be to get in? What do you know about the driver next to you or the person getting into the car next to you? It will be a little kid who maybe doesn't understand, you know. You know, you're picking up your mother-in-law. She's going to get in that side.
Yeah.
What's she going to think of your parking?
Using specific real-world examples. I like it.
Yeah.
We mentioned it a couple of times about the top 10 reasons people fail. How damaging is that goes out every year so everyone can see it? It's published by a government organization that sent out in emails and social media, and then every driving instructor gets hold of it and talks about it. How damaging is that to what, let's say, we are trying to achieve?
It's just ridiculous. It just shows that their mantra, you know, safe driving for life. Got to be careful what I said. I can't get in trouble again with it.
I like you said again. I get in trouble again.
Yeah. It goes against road safety because it just focuses, first of all, it focuses their attention on, right, these are the things people fail on. And so an ADI might look at that and go, oh, this is what people fail on. I better teach this properly. I don't want to fall into a trap of the top 10 reasons people fail. And then the training then has to become test focused. And nothing changes. They pass the test and they go and kill themselves. Well, they're mates. I mean, it beggars belief. And it actually upsets me every time I read, you know, four kids killed in a car crash. You know, there was one recently, I think it was Scotland. Three young men gone, wasted. And it's every time I read something like that, it's in my head, it's we should be doing better. We could be doing so much better. And that freaking top 10 reasons people fail is just goes against everything that we're trying to change.
Even if we did look at it, and I know we're not, but even if we did look at it from a test-centered approach, imagine we were taking a test-centered approach. What if they fail for point number 11 or 12? You know, it's like, why not produce the top 50 in order? Why only the top 10, you know?
Yeah.
And I cannot remember the chap's name, but it was someone at the conference earlier this year from the DVSA. I forget his name, but I spoke to him about this specifically. And I was, you know, getting quite agitated, actually, saying, why are we still promoting this? That's not why people fail. That's the box we tick. As the technical thing. But it's not why they failed 99% of the time. Occasionally there's going to be a skill issue, you know, whatever, but 99% of the time there's going to be another reason, which we know when we sit in the back. we know why they're we know when they're going to fail sometimes, because we can see the body language, or we can say, well, look, right, they're going to fail now. Or they, well, you, in fact, you don't think that, you think, please don't, please do this, please do this, you know. But it's just like, no, that's why they fail. I'm like, and he used to be an instructor. I'm like, no, you know as well as I do, it's not. And as instructors, whether this is on lessons, whether it's on social media, whether it's on podcasts or whatever, there's so much about the top 10 fails.
Mm.
What would you suggest, or would you suggest something? Could you suggest something that we could do to counter that? I mentioned before about the top 10 reasons people crash as opposed to fails. You know, is there anything you could suggest that we can do as instructors to counter that rather than promote that?
How about the top 10 reasons people pass?
There you go. Well, it's me and you, Terry. I'm going to do Terry and Terry, top 10 reasons people pass.
Let's look at that.
Yeah.
You know, what are top 10 reasons people pass? You know, who knows what we'll come up with, but I bet somewhere along there, it'll be well prepared, or great mindset, or, you know, handled situation.
You just got yourself another podcast episode with that. I don't know where that fits. I don't know how it's going to work, but me and you somehow we're doing the top 10 reasons people pass. You mentioned test prep, mm-hmm. doing test prep, and you spoke a couple of things about what you do. What's your stance on mock tests?
Fantastic. I don't think we use them well enough. And again, it's from the way we're trained. See, the problem with training, that's what you're doing.
I'm sorry for making you feel this way today, Terry.
Oh, it's just, I love the job, and I love being in this industry, but some of it just frustrates the hell out of me. And one of them is training. And I'm just going to talk about the training in this country, although I do it, is ridiculous. You've got people who were trained by bad trainers or poor trainers, and they've passed on all their poor skills, and their skills got them to pass the part three. And it's normally based in PST stuff anyway. And then a couple of years later, this new ADI says, oh, I fancy training. They don't go and get any training. And they teach the new PDIs the same way they were taught. And so this poor training it's just a vicious circle. And then I can't remember the bloody question again. Jesus.
Well, it was about mock tests, but then you started telling me about training.
Thank you. And so this poor trainer taught this PDI about mock tests. And it's to, you know, do it 4 weeks before the test, make it as realistic as you can, blah, 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 and then go through all the things I did wrong. And then work on those things to test, blah, blah, blah. And so the new ADI teaches the next PDI to do the same thing. And so that's traditionally how we do mock tests. Nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with that. If that's going to help the student, brilliant. But there's so many other ways. You know, so many other ways we can do a mock test. We can do specific mock tests. Let's go mock test your maneuvers. Let's go mock test your roundabout. Let's do roundabouts 20 minutes. Let's do a test on that. And this is test prep. It's not test focused training. Let's do a mini mock. You know, mini mock. You can do a mini mock on first lesson. Let's do a mini mock on your pulling away. You get the sheet out on your mark, kid. You know, great. Brilliant, look at that. Zero faults. Let's do a mini mock on pulling over now. Let's do a mini mock on left turns. And the good thing about mock testing is it gets them used to being tested, which again, hopefully, would help them have a more positive outlook on the actual test. But again, it's still linked to real world post-test driving. And that's the important thing for mock tests. Needs to be linked to post-test driving too. And the feedback, something I also like to do is a reverse mock. Let's go for a 10-minute drive, and I'm going to mark everything you do well on this sheet. And the sheet's full of ticks after 10 minutes. Don't do an hour. Don't do 40 minutes. You won't have enough room. Yeah. Every time checking mirror, boom. Speed on the focus, boom. Whatever else on the sheet, pull away, tick. And they see all these ticks. And it's like, it's just full of ink. So I like to do that, especially if someone has, there's a difference between their competence and their confidence of what they're doing. I like to use that in those situations. But again, it's it's linking it to post-test driving. You know, all these great things you do when you're driving your mate's home.
I think that positivity is a big one as well. I like that idea of reverse mock test. I think I do something similar, but I don't do it in like a mock test fashion. Now, I always think about someone making a mistake. So again, I don't like the word mistake, but the gear changes isn't as smooth as I'd like, or they put it wrong gear and then put it back or whatever, and they'll mention it. I'm like, how many times have you changed gear today? Well, I don't know. Take a guess. It's probably like 400. Okay. How many times has it not gone as well as you'd want? Like twice. Mm. So 398, but you notice the two. The same way you notice the one car that beeps, not the other 764 that didn't beep at you that day.
Absolutely.
So I think that positivity is massive. But I think one other thing I want to ask your opinion around the test, because something I used to do, I'm holding my hands up here, you know, we all make mistakes. And at least I believe it's a mistake. You might correct me on this and say it's the right thing. But when we're talking about a test, I used to offer advice outside the test center. You know, we pulled up outside test center, ready to go in. And I would start going, oh, remember this. Oh, if this happens, do this. And it took me ages to realize I've just now given them a shitload of stuff to remember before they go and do a test that they're already nervous about. So for anyone listening that does that, what I used to do, and then I'm clearly saying I don't think it's a good idea, that offers that last minute advice, what would your thoughts be on that? What do you say to someone that's doing that?
Firstly, I should do it as well.
Right.
Absolutely. I think, absolutely should do that. And actually, I think I was being helpful. Advice. Don't do it. Because like you said, they're not listening. You know, if they don't know it now, there's no point talking about it. All you'll be doing is filling their head and their mind with stuff that won't help. So yeah, I think I was not being helpful.
Yes.
I was being the complete opposite.
Yeah.
Don't.
Yeah. I tend to think, you know, if I'm having to remind them of stuff, it means I haven't helped them enough beforehand.
Yeah, possibly. Yeah.
They should know that before. But you mentioned the training aspect then. I just want to touch on this briefly. And I don't necessarily want to talk about DVSA because they're crap at this. I don't necessarily want to talk about driving schools because I don't think we can reach them. You know, the bulk of them, not all, some really, really good ones, but the bulk of them are out there to make money and churn people through and whatnot. But the people that are currently, let's look at it from both perspectives. I'll let you answer both. The PDIs and ADI perspective. So if you're currently receiving training, you may not know that training's poor because you don't know what you don't know. Or if you're an ADI that has received training, again, you may not realize that training was part. Somehow you've qualified and now you're off. So if they were then thinking about going into training and training others, how would you address them? What should they do before they start training other people?
Go and get some training. Simple as. I my trainer, I'm not going to mention what company it was, but they were quite big in the day. I didn't realize how bad my training was until I went somewhere else after two failed part three attempts. So yeah, we don't know what you don't know. But if you are thinking about going down the training PDI route, go and get some training. Just because you're a good instructor doesn't mean you're going to be a good trainer. Same as football. Great players don't make good managers. It's a different job. You know, training PDIs is different to training learners. And the fact that anybody could train a PDI is just, I can't even think of words. It's that ridiculous. So don't be like the majority and just go straight into it. Go and find out how to do it properly.
Then from the other perspective, and I suppose this would be more aimed at PDIs, but I suppose it does apply to ADIs as well. How do you know if your training's any good? Because I suppose listening to something like this can help because you get to hear different perspectives, but how would you know if the training you're currently receiving is quality?
Great question. How do you know? You're right. You know, how would you know? Because I see some posts about instructors in where I am from. I know a lot of instructors around here. And I read posts from their students going, the best instructor ever. I'm going, no, they're not. They're absolutely shit. But that's all they know. So they're going to be the best instructor ever because they haven't passed the test. So how would you know? Great question, Terry. I guess some that come into my head, the only way you'd actually know is going to multiple trainers. But I wouldn't recommend that because we all train differently. And some have more or less skills than others. Maybe intuition. Listen to intuition.
That's a good shout. You know, stuff doesn't always feel right.
Yeah.
And I think that ties into the thing that I suggest is not being afraid to, not challenge, but ask your trainer, you know, why is that? Why are we doing this? What's the purpose of this? And a good trainer, at least in my opinion, a good trainer will be able to answer that and not just shut down and go, because I've said so. You know, I've given this example before, and my trainer was a great trainer for the PSTs. He's very probably a really good trainer now for client-side learning. I learned in the old PSTs, but I can vividly recall so I'm saying that to clarify, I'm not criticizing him, but I can vividly recall on one training session, we'd gone from a 30 to a 40 zone, and I think I'd changed to 4/4/5 or whatever, and I didn't check my center right mirror. And he said to me, what should you do when you change your speed and change gear? And I said, I'll check my center right mirror. Okay, so why didn't you? I said, I don't know. And he said, well, if you don't know, if you know what you should do, but you don't know why you didn't do it, then I can't help you anymore. And I can remember just being like, that's not great. That's kind of your job. And I think that, like you said, intuition. So when someone doesn't feel like that, not being afraid to ask them or any aspect of it, and being afraid to ask them, they should be to explain. And where you said about multiple training, I agree with you. You shouldn't be going to like 10 different trainers necessarily because you get too much information.
Yeah.
But I also think podcasts, YouTube channels, Facebook groups even are a good way of getting different ideas and different contexts. And then going back to your trainer and saying, I saw this. What are your thoughts on this? And it might be that the trainer's right and that the person posting it was wrong. And the trainer can explain that. Or it might be the other way around. And I think it's the way the trainer responds to that can be a really good indicator whether that training is actually any good or not. At least they're my thoughts.
Yeah, no, I'm really, really dubious with YouTube. I probably wouldn't send a PDO to a YouTube channel unless I knew it. Same with podcasts. I mean, it's you, basically, you and oh, Josh. If they listen to you too, they'd break. I listen to these guys. I YouTube scares me. When a PDI says I saw this on YouTube, a shiver goes down me. So, oh God, what have they said now? So definitely podcasts. One thing I will say is before you choose your trainer, research them. Ask them two questions. What training have you done to train me? And what qualifications have you done to train me? If the answer is zero to both of them, next.
Yeah, I can see that. I've got interesting thoughts on qualifications, but I think I'm coming around to them. But that's another topic for another day. Just a brief aside, podcast, we've also got Inspire podcast, which I would recommend.
Inspire, sorry, I forgot about Phil and...
Diana, yep.
Diana, yep, sorry.
Knowledgeable Instructor Training, Liam Mick.
Oh, yes, of course, yeah, Liam Mick every day, yeah.
And Dipod, but only when you're tired and need an app. Sorry, Dipod, I do love you, really. And regarding YouTube, you can find the ADI and JC on there. Their channel is quite good. Tom and Terry are popping up on there now quite regularly. And so I just wanted to chuck those out there just to make sure that people aren't just listening to me. They get a variety.
They're recommended because you know they're good.
Exactly.
You know they're talking about. I forgot Liam, Mick and Phil and Diane.
I always forget
guys,
someone.
If you're listening.
Don't worry. I often get a message after episodes where someone will say, you mentioned all these people, you didn't mention me. I'm like, I can't mention everyone. But yes, but now we know you're good, Terry. So in fact, if people listen to this episode, if there was only one thing they take away from it, what's the one thing you would like them to take away from today?
It's Monday morning, you know that, right?
It's Monday morning. It is indeed. I'm on form. You need to be.
It does pretty often.
Jesus.
One thing. All right, here we go. It's kind of two things, but it can wrap them into one. Try, right, if you think coaching isn't, if you try coaching and it doesn't work, don't give up and go and learn how to do it.
I like it. Do you want to take a moment to tell people where they can find you and what you might have that's of interest?
You can find me on Bookface. Sorry, Facebook. Name is Terry Leftery. Hear that?
Yeah.
Thank you. Done Stressing is my website. So I'm also a personal coach and business coach. So you can find some stuff on there. LinkedIn, I'm on LinkedIn. Yeah, that's it really.
So, well, links for that will be in the show notes and the episode description, and the episode workbook, I should say. But all that's left to me to say is big thank you for joining me today, Terry Leftery. It's been a pleasure.
I feel humbled to be asked to. It's been a good blast. Thank you so much.
A big thank you to Terry for joining me on today's episode. I found that quite thought-provoking. It made me think a little bit about the way I teach and reflect on, do I potentially talk about the test a bit too much? Do I get that balance right? Definitely something for me to think about. And I just want to give a reminder to you guys that I hope you signed up for the Instructor Podcast email, because you will get the accompanying workbook that goes alongside this. Now, if you haven't signed up already, don't worry, we'll be sending another email in a few days with the same workbook in. But every episode that goes out on a month-by-month basis, you will get the episode workbook. So make sure you are signed up to the Instructor Podcast email list, and you can find that in the show notes. Well, I hope you enjoyed it. Thank you for listening. I'm going to make a little suggestion to you now. Switch off your phone. Take a break from your phone. Put it away. We need to start unplugging a little bit more as people. And I think we can be guilty of spending too much time on our phone. So I am now going to suggest that you unplug, switch off your phone, take a couple of hours away, and maybe revisit again later on. But for now, let's keep raising standards.
The Instructor Podcast with Terry Cook. Talking with leaders, innovators, experts and game changers about what drives them.